Go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Be right there. Sometimes it's just fun to listen to the tattoo. I do love that. That is a tattoo, isn't it? Oh, who knows? It's about 25 minutes before the hour. I am 35 minutes late for the horn, 35 minutes late to the microphone, 35 minutes late to the studio. But you know what? In light of the fact that I had said we weren't going to be here at all, 35 minutes is better late than never. Not at all, right?
Bob's late, but thank you for sharing it with me.
Speak up, dear. You got to talk into the microphone.
Bob's late because of me, but thank you all for persevering and hanging out for us.
Well, no, Bob's not late because of her. Bob's here because of her. You might recall I had planned that this, our 22nd wedding anniversary, was going to be a celebration. Very few people know that on the hillbilly list of anniversary gifts, you know, rock, paper, scissors, that kind of thing, when you get to anniversary number 22, it's mustard sandwiches. And so Devin says, I sensed a disturbance in the force. I came. I heard.
Hi, Devin.
But the weather was kind of gray and cloudy and shitty. And I mean, it's not pissing down rain or anything, but it didn't have that je ne sais quoi, that you want for an anniversary. So Agnes said, go to work. And so earlier this afternoon, we went out and engaged in a frenzy of horn bill paying. Paid some, not all. But I convinced her to let me stop, and we, instead of mustard sandwiches, stopped at Secret Sandwich Society, one of my favorite places in the cool little hip culture of Fayetteville, West Virginia, and we had a lovely time. By the way, Devin says, hi, Mrs. Kincaid.
Hi, Devin. Thank you. Mwah.
Oh, my God, I don't even get that. So, that's why we sat there and the boss, and make no mistake, I talk about Boss Man Wayne. This here is the boss. The boss decided to drink a not too far away produced, Imperial IPA, which came off at apparently 10% alcohol. I'm like, honey, do you really want... Yes, I want to.
That. Oh, and Tim, Konnichiwa.
Ooh, using her Japanese and everything. Konbawa, Tim. Aw, that's nice. A note from Gerald says, glad you shared the mustard sandwich thing. This August will be 22 years for us, too. I never knew. Oh, don't ask about year 23. Because I'm making up the hillbilly anniversary list as I go. I'm thinking year 23 is going to be a door plane.
We've already been through that, Bob, and you don't win on that one.
Oh, Tim's jealous. What? No kiss, Agnes?
Mwah. Sorry, Tim.
Okay. Oh, Jesus. This could rapidly turn into a jealousy fest of make Agnes kiss me, too.
I love you all.
Anyway... And a little bit ago, because this is just how we live. So we left to go and engage in our frenzy of bill paying. And Agnes opens the front door of the mansion. And I hear, Bob! Yeah, baby. Bob, there are chickens on our porch.
I call it dinner.
And if it had been anybody else, I would have, oh, come on, quit pulling my leg. But see, 22 years. Because in another time, in another place, I heard the, as the old farmhouse door opened, and I heard her lovely, sweet, dulcet-toned voice, Bob! Bob, there's cat in the yard! And there were. A small herd of cattle in the yard of our lovely little rural fixer-upper burner-downer. Sous vide dinner. Oh no, you couldn't hurt these chickens because they're young and cannot, and you can tell they're like little teenager Justin Bieber fan chickens. Because they're walking around behind this juvenile rooster like he's the only thing, only thing worth living for on earth. So there was every bit of like 8-9 chickens in the yard from the neighbors, of course, following this one rooster who'd gone walkabout.
But they're sweet.
And they're just as cute as can be, and I think they're Rhode Island Reds. Naturally, they're at our house. They're Reds. And so we went away, did our thing, and we came back, pulled into the driveway, and they're still here, hanging out, because I married Ellie Mae.
They're really not going to be for dinner. I'm just watching for eggs.
I mean, over the years, we've had watch possums.
Squirrels.
We've had squirrels.
Raccoon.
We've had a raccoon.
Deer.
We've had deer. And once upon a time... A lion got out from a little private zoo, and Agnes hung out in the backyard for about three, four weeks, hollering, "Here, kitty, kitty." So now these are some free-range chickens because they have free-ranged every bit of a good 100 yards from home, maybe 200 from home. But it was really cute. Because we pulled into the driveway, having been out in our frenzy of bill paying and having stopped, and Agnes having quaffed a 10% Imperial IPA.
And I deserved it because I blew out the butt cheek of my pants.
Oh, my God. Okay, too much info. Don't say blew out. It's just a hole, okay?
That's not a hole.
Okay.
That is not a hole. It's one whole cheek. It was embarrassing, but...
Yeah, there was this lovely ripping sound. But anyway, we pull into the driveway and the chickens are back and I swear to God, sitting in the middle bedroom window is our lovely blonde cat Mushu, who is looking longingly out the window at the chickens, and the chickens are looking back at her going, "Yeah." Green Acres got nothing on us. Nothing. Mr. Haney will be in the driveway any minute now with an automated Hooterville chicken catcher. As I so often say, welcome to my world.
And Carlos, no, we have kitties and we have chickens that
Carol.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't have my glasses on.
You don't have your No. No, we don't have cattle. We have wandering neighbor chickens.
Carol, please forgive me.
But I'm here. And it's about 16 minutes before the hour. And hopefully we'll have a lovely little conversation this evening. And I think you just did that, dear.
Love you guys. I'm going to go away now.
So there's stuff to talk about this evening, by all means. Yes. And by the way, yes, like Kathy's, Mushu is an indoor kitty. She does not go outside. She's above all that. But every now and then she thinks it might. And the thing is, I know darn good and well she would not fare well in a battle with any of those critters outside. And I think she knows it too. No, Gerald, it's too early for the fucking flies. All right, so all things being equal, we've got a nice little impromptu gathering in the Horn chat room. If you'd like to participate, you're welcome to run right on by during live program hours, you know, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern time. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Carol in Australia. Good evening, Devin. Good evening, iPie. Good evening, Kathy. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening, Tim from L.A. And, of course, as ever, even this evening when I said I wasn't going to be here, still, Sparky saw the Bob signal go up in illuminated against the clouds, and he's here, and Lottie's here, capable, inveterate, veteran, indefatigable chat room moderators that they are. So, we'll find something to talk about. And I don't know if Sparky feels, because last night, and expecting not to be here today, we did Thorn in the Front Porch, Thorn in the Front Porch Thursday. So I don't know if Sparky's up for a Friday on the front porch or not. I'll wait to hear from him. But we've got a rock solid couple of hours of conversation available to us this evening. And someone was trying to get involved last night and kept calling into the studio, and it was a call I couldn't take because, well, we can't mix phone calls into the Skype group, and it's just kind of, not my choice. Awesome. Thank you, Sparky. We can do it, Bob. So consider the bat signal lighted, the Bob signal. And we'll try to get ourselves a Friday on the front porch going in fairly short order. I'm informed that our buddy Ron is listening on Skype and working side channel. Good, good, good. Yeah, the horn signal. Thank you, Tim. Now, where to go this evening? There's a number of potentials, but I awoke this morning to the news, as did many of us, those of us who pay attention. And, well, if anybody pays attention, the Horn Family Commune congregation pays attention. To the news that there will be charges filed against the Baltimore Six. Charges of, and have been filed, charges of malicious assault, charges of manslaughter, murder of any sort is, I suppose, a bridge too far. And the first thing that I thought, and maybe it's just because of who I am, how I am, is that while the announcement was being made and some people were shouting, "Justice!" We need to bear in mind that while the cry is that the cry is justice for Freddie Gray, realistically speaking, Freddie Gray can never have justice because Freddie Gray is entirely too busy being dead. Justice is what happens in a culture that cares about keeping the Freddie Grays of this world, the Michael Browns of this world, the Tamir Rices of this world, the Walter Scotts of this world, from getting all dead. And therein, we see the fundamental flaw in arguments from politicians of many stripes saying, well, what we've got to have is criminal justice reform. Because the grassroots activists have been out there for quite some time saying that we need criminal justice reform. They were calling for justice for the Freddie Grays of the world before the fact. They were calling for justice while the horses were still in the barn. Not after the horses were long gone and someone wandering around trying to close the door. And so we're reminded that whether the Baltimore Six are charged with manslaughter or murder in the first degree, sorry, that ain't going to happen. Even though if he was injured in a so-called rough ride, it indicates a pattern and practice of what can only be considered malice aforethought, and malice aforethought being kind of an element of murder in the first degree. You really can't provide justice to a dead person, can you? And I'm not saying that the charges should not be filed, but I'm trying to point out the essential failing, and it's one that legal historians and legal scholars and philosophers and ethicists constantly deal with. I'm trying to point out the fact that the law is always one step behind where justice is concerned and five steps out front where punishment is concerned. And that's the present reality. We need a wholesale rethinking of that term that passes for criminal justice. Criminal justice is even a bullshit term. Because we also live in a constitutional system that claims to presume people innocent. Freddie Gray could not wind up all dead in a system that took seriously the notion that everyone is presumed innocent until proven guilty before a jury of his or her peers beyond a reasonable doubt. Because you see, on that day when the cops looked at Freddie Gray looked at the cops and took off, taking off having eyeballed a cop is not a crime. And it does not rebut the presumption of innocence. I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere else, although I do not, unlike our news ninjas, get up and read the entire internet every day. I have not seen anywhere mentioned the fact that Freddie Gray's case is a modern manifestation, or a recent manifestation, of something that used to be known and is still known in parts of the pernicious Confederate South as the eyeball rule. Our friends and members of the Horn Family Commune congregation who are of color will know damned well what I mean by the eyeball rule. There were a set of rules that applied throughout the Jim Crow South that were never written down, but were viciously applied. The eyeball rule was one of them. Upon being looked upon by a white person, a person of color was expected to avert his or her eyes, especially males, the his part. You did not look eye to eye with a white person. It worked alongside things like the step-off rule, wherein even if the street was mud, if white folks was coming down the sidewalk, a person of color was expected to step off into the filth and the ordure in order to let the decent, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered white people go past. The eyeball rule was part and parcel, and this is and it creates a bit of a continuum. The eyeball rule was part and parcel of why Emmett Till, all of 15 years old, 60 plus years ago, was murdered by white people in Mississippi. Because he had the temerity to eyeball and perhaps compliment the appearance of a white woman. Because he came from Chicago, and up there the Negroes were all uppity. Well, all the accounts of Freddie Gray's killing begin with the fact that he eyeballed the Baltimore Six. And then attempted to make an exit. This then was determined by the Baltimore Six to be probable cause to kill. And that needs to be taken into account. Because no, Devin, leaving the general area of the police does not constitute probable cause for anything. although I'm sure the police are convinced that it does. So that needs to be borne in mind. The police, armed to the teeth, perceived a threat from a young black man who simply tried to go away from them, who had violated no law, who had gone against no ordinance, he simply tried to get away, and now, among others, the Washington Post has participated in the post-mortem sliming of Freddie Gray. It's shameful, and it is also entirely typical of law enforcement behavior in this crumbling empire. So when you hear mainstream politicians saying, "We, by God, need criminal justice reform," not really. I mean, sure, yeah, absolutely, no disagreement. But what we need is police reform. Plain and simple, but no one dare say it that way for fear of damaging the delicate fifis of law enforcement in this country. See, that's another thing to consider. In the moment that they chased him down and decided to kill him, the Baltimore Six were no longer engaged in law enforcement. They were merely another street gang in Baltimore City. If you look at it that way, it becomes an entirely different case. The Baltimore Six were no better and arguably manifestly worse than the Crips or the Bloods or any other street gang Baltimore had to offer. Given their performance over the past, 5 years or so, according to the community itself, the Baltimore Six and the Baltimore Police Department as a whole were probably the most badass street gang Baltimore had to offer. Yeah, as Kathy notes in the chat room, bad cops make up the biggest gang in the United States. Indeed. Indeed. So that's the background against which we take the charges against the Baltimore Six into consideration. Note from Steve in New York City saying, "I disagree, Bob. Dare I say this was not a gang but a lynch mob?" Well, a gang that kills black people is a lynch mob. A lynch mob doesn't always have to have a rope. Sometimes all it needs is a van. Emmett Till was beaten past recognition, had his bodies wrapped in chains and an old fan from a cotton gin, if I recall correctly, when he was thrown into the Pearl River, was it? So we have, I think, a better understanding of what is actually needed in this country. Not criminal justice reform, because, well, no, we need that too. Among other things, the federal sentencing guidelines that were imposed in the, 1980s under, God knows, Ronnie Reagan, that greasy-headed B-movie actor routinely upstaged by a chimp and out-acted, I might add. Those things need to go the hell away. Judges need discretion, or else they're not judges. They're just legal accountants who take one from column B and two from column C, add 12, carry 5, and come up with a population that has a country that has more people locked up than any other developed nation in the world. 5% of the world's population, 25% of the world's incarcerated population. That's us. The greatest country in the world on earth now, ever, today. Yeah. So we need to rethink that. But we need police reform. We need a wholesale reform of how we go about policing, that, or else we need to get rid of this notion of innocent until proven guilty. It would probably be easier to do that, and it would make a certain segment of this population manifestly happier as long as it wasn't being applied to them. Talking about the birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, birchers, baggers, booger eaters, libertarians, and Republicans. Because, see, that crowd always wants mercy, not justice. And Freddie Gray could have done damned well better with a heaping helping of mercy instead of the ad hoc, improvised, vicious, psychopathic justice that was dealt out to him. See what I mean? The state's attorney, rather than, because everyone was waiting today for the report on the Baltimore Six to be released, but instead of that happening, and because it had been announced that the report would not be forthcoming, the state's attorney, which is a prosecutor, I guess, in Maryland, the state's attorney announced today that all six officers in the arrest, involved in the arrest and transportation of Freddie Gray would be charged. Caesar Goodson was the wheel man. He was the man driving the van that transported Freddie Gray. Caesar Goodson is going to be charged with second-degree murder. Heat of passion murder. And I'm really curious about that. If, in fact, as has been noted in the past, rough rides in paddy wagons were a practice among that heavily armed street gang known as the Baltimore Police Department, How is it heat of passion murder and not murder with malice aforethought? The other five police officers, members of that gang, will be charged with manslaughter, assault, and misconduct in public office. State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby said, "We are very much committed to pursuing justice, accountability. You're getting it today." Officer William G. Porter will be charged with manslaughter, involuntary, and second-degree assault and misconduct in office. Lieutenant Brian W. Rice will be charged with manslaughter, involuntary, second-degree assault, and three counts of misconduct in office. Officer Edward M. Nero will be charged with second-degree assault, two counts of misconduct in office, and one count of false imprisonment. Those are charges. I don't know how Maryland law operates. Maybe that means that those are the charges that will go to trial. I don't know if you have to be indicted in Maryland. If you do still have to be indicted, every last charge could be dismissed at a preliminary hearing. Meanwhile, the Baltimore Police Street Gangs Union is calling for Ms. Mosby to recuse herself and ask the court to appoint a special prosecutor. I'm kind of hard-pressed on this, and I'll probably get myself in trouble, but as someone who roundly and soundly supports labor, I don't support not a dime's worth cop unions. Not after the way we've seen them behave in New York, and not after we see how they're behaving in Baltimore. Because the head of the police union in Baltimore has already made himself obnoxious. Fraternal Order of Police Lodge number 3. Yeah, it's just a lodge. It's like the Moose and the Elks and the Optimist and the Eagles and the Sons of Pythias and the Masons and the Shriners. It's just a lodge. Hell no, it's not. President Gene Ryan wrote to Ms. Mosby in an open letter published today, "I have very deep concerns about the many conflicts of interest presented by your office conducting an investigation in this case." And therein, we see part of the problem. Police Union President Gene Ryan thinks he is so privileged as to be able to declare whether or not Ms. Mosby has a conflict of interest, when only Ms. Mosby and the court, and arguably the State Bar of Maryland, can make that determination. But bear in mind, yes, these are only probable cause findings, the charges. It may well be that there is a long road to travel to actually get to an indictment and to an appearance by any of these arguably outlaw cops in a court of law. Meanwhile, of course, the fact that the Baltimore Six are being charged with crimes. Well, it doesn't sit at all well with the white wing in America. No, not at all well. Twitter did what Twitter did best going into Twitter hysteria. The notorious asshole Todd Starnes declared, "The Maryland State's Attorney has declared war on law enforcement." No, she didn't. She said that probable cause existed to charge the Baltimore Six with a crime. The Baltimore Six, on the other hand, didn't even get so far as probable cause before they killed Freddie Gray. Let's see. Here's some jagoff named Gabe Ortiz. Marilyn Mosby's father, mother, and grandfather were police officers. Oh, I'm sorry. That person was responding to some idiot. Read that in the wrong voice. The prosecutor is a rookie racist and political. How can you be a rookie racist? What? And working with the mayor, Al Sharpton. The mayor of Baltimore is Al Sharpton? And the White House in this case. Teabaggers, what are you going to do? Grammar, syntax, lost. The asshole Todd Starnes said, "That smirk at the end of the state's attorney's remarks spoke volumes." Trying to create a hashtag called anti-police. Witch hunt to appease the race mob. Assault for not buckling someone? How does that meet the intent elements of the statute? Marilyn Mosby is married to Nick Mosby, the riot and looter apologist. Here's another jackass who refers to people upset about the murder of Freddie Gray as being spoiled children. Hashtag I want it now. Hashtag Veruca Salt. I have a racist narrative that matches my ideological bias and corrupted brain. All cops are murderous until further notice. Well, you know what? No, not really. But how about how Freddie Gray and ever so many other people abused by the Baltimore street gang known as the police department? How about the presumptions that the Baltimore police made about them? So much for presumption of innocence. See a few minutes back in the broadcast. And being classy right-wingers, here comes the Mosby is a racist bitch. F her and her husband, only it doesn't say F. Here's a genius. Wrong cops are innocent. Huh? Mosby let being black lib KKK rat influence being black, lib, KKK, rat comes first to them. This isn't as racist. The white wing 140 character per tweet brigade is on the job. Yeah. Gonna get uglier. Because if the white folks riot, that's going to be real bad. Real bad indeed. By the way, I want to send out thanks to Joyce and John and to Peter, who helped us even before we knew I was going to be on the air this evening, who helped out with Friday fundraising. It is very important and much appreciated. If you want to jump in alongside them, feel free to run over to headonradionetwork.com and the PayPal interface over there. The U.S. Postal Service address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801. So let's take a very short break and see if we've got a little Friday on the Front Porch gang pulled together. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is radio that you make. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Breaking rocks in a hot sun, up on below.
I thought that was a nice little bumper. The Clash and their version of the Bobby Fuller Four's I Fought the Law and the Law Won. Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, and never underestimate the powers of longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran Horn Malloy Skype chat group moderator, originator Sparky, and his ability to pull together a Friday on the Front Porch group at a moment's notice. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob. It's not that hard.
Don't sell yourself short. These are Herculean monumental labors that leave you bathed and, in fact, lathered in sweat.
Okay, I wanted to give you a little update. I watched Winnebago Man last night.
Yeah?
And that guy, Manton's just right up the road from me, old Jack Rebney.
I wondered where it was relative to you.
And his place did burn down.
Oh.
In 2012 during the big Ponderosa fire. Because I figured it did when I saw where he lived. Because going through Manton, I know where the Manton store is and the school, and most of the houses are up north of there, and that's where the fire was. And anyway, there's information on a website, winnebago.com, and he's got a book out.
Yes, he does. The book that gets referenced in the film.
I missed it, but it's...
What is it? Jousting with the Myth.
Yeah. And he prefers that the one guy that was in the movie there, I forget his name, but, oh, Keith Gordon, his old friend.
Yeah.
Was down in the desert, says he rather people download the audio version and listen to it.
Oh, wow, I didn't know there was a downloadable audio version.
That's what he said on Facebook last year on their Facebook page. They got a Facebook page, but...
Oh, okay.
Not much information for the Winnebago Man. So I'd be interested to hear his book. He's quite a weird person.
I'm fascinated by him, not because of his Winnebago fame, but because, obviously, this man had a long and storied and pretty impressive career in broadcast journalism. And you know, he never would have been hired for the Winnebago thing had he not had that magnificent voice, and is obviously a pretty damn good writer, too. Y'all still there?
Yeah, anyway, I just wanted to give you an update on that.
Cool.
To start things off, since I sat down and watched it last night and went, who the heck, what?
Well, it's an excellent little documentary, isn't it?
But as soon as I saw the Vista shots and everything, I go, damn, I've been to all them places.
Yeah, neighbor.
Just about.
Well, let's see. You have pulled together a good Friday on the Front Porch group this evening. Rick joins us from Southern California. Hey, Rick. Understanding that Rick has mouse versus microphone USB problems, as explained previously.
Oh.
There he is.
Hey, how are you, Bob?
So you patched and repatched the mouse and the microphone then?
No, actually, I have to blame this one on just running out for a little spot of tea, so to speak.
Oh, well, don't let that happen again.
I know. So, sounds like you guys sort of rejiggered your day. That was great to hear you and Agnes just kind of hanging out there in the studio, Bob.
Well, she is a firm taskmistress, but I pay attention when I'm told what to do.
That's very important. I think one of the two most important words in a lasting marriage are yes, dear. For the guy, of course.
Absolutely. And so, no, I don't think it ever got above 55 degrees here today. And certainly that day 22 years ago was much warmer and much more pleasant. So we looked at the weather forecast, and it looks like Sunday is sunshine, blue skies, warm temperatures. So that'll be our mustard sandwich picnic.
Awesome. Is there any side dish that you have with the mustard sandwiches there, Bob?
Well, it can be anything. I mean, it's just that, you know, year 22 on the Hillbilly anniversary list is mustard sandwiches. Like I said, year 23 is a door plane.
What is a door plane? To hold a door open, you mean?
No. you use it to plane a door so it'll be square enough to close.
Oh. Oh, jeez. That doesn't sound too delicious to me.
Well, I mean, they all aren't. I mean, let's see. What is it? Year 17 is... Year 17 is a critter trap. I mean, this is rural Appalachia. It has to have a certain amount of practicality to it.
Yeah, exactly.
What's 25 years?
Oh, 25 years is pretty special. It's an old car up on blocks.
Oh, very funny, Bob. Hey, I was commenting on the Skype chat that your chickens have literally come home to roost today, Bob.
Well, yes, they have, and you know, I think it shows the growing popularity of Friday on the front porch when the chickens are coming home to roost on the front porch on Friday.
Absolutely, it's very fitting.
Or we could call it dinner on the. Well, it's not a hoof, is it? No, these are young'uns, though. I mean, I wouldn't. They're not eating age yet.
Yeah.
And I think they're layers. Yeah. I think they're layers anyway.
Oh, they're hens, you mean?
Yeah, laying hens.
Oh. Setting hens. Oh, okay. Hmm.
Although, like I said, they're juveniles, and they were following around this young rooster like Justin Bieber.
That's funny. So is there, those belong to one of your neighbors somewhere, you imagine?
Yeah, they're just free-ranging, and I guess we've got some really good worms in the dirt here.
Hey, there you go. It's all the gardening you do, right?
No, I don't do any gardening. I haven't in years, ever since the deer.
The deer ate all your stuff,
yeah,
that's
ever since
right.
The deer ran me out of the business.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you do, Sparky, to stop the critters from getting into your produce and stuff?
Uh-oh, Sparky must have snuck away.
He must have snuck away, yeah, yeah.
Well,
all right, well, I'll tell you what, Bob, let someone else have a shot here.
Oh, there's Sparky.
I'm here. I've got the double muted thing going. The birds, we feed the birds, and so nothing bugs. You know, we have to dust the tomatoes for worms if you start seeing them. But that's about it.
Worms?
Hmm?
It's not from the chickens, is it? The worms?
No, it's droppings? Tomato worms. They come around once in a while.
Oh, okay, yeah. Do they look like silkworms, like the green ones, those little tiny green worms, or not?
Well, kind of.
Okay, maybe that's it then. Yeah.
You just have to dust the tomato plants, and it drives them off.
All right, that's cool.
I remember years and years...
My neighbor's chickens don't ever get out.
I remember years and years and years ago when I was a kid and we were planting peach trees, a scientist up the street advised, once we had the peach trees in the ground, that we dig come out 3 feet from the trunk of the little peach tree sapling and dig a little trench 3 feet all around, or dig a little trench all the way around in a circle 3 feet out. That would be a diameter, wouldn't it? And drop in mothballs, because the mothballs would stop borer worms that were prone to ruining the rootstock of young trees. All kinds of worms out there.
Those mothballs are nasty. Naphthalene, I think.
Yep. But they're also good for putting off snakes, I'm told.
Oh, Well, I think they put off people as well.
Under certain circumstances involving the Pentagon, yes.
That's right. That's right. They don't like their things mothballed.
There's still a mothball fleet in the Delta, down here in the Bay. Not very big anymore.
Yeah, there's one, I think, in, is it Nellis Air Force Base in the near, in the Mojave Desert? Or is it Edwards? It's Edwards.
Air Force Base. Arizona.
Well, there's also one in Edwards, too.
Yeah, old aircraft. Yeah. And then there's a mothball naval fleet as well. Oh, by the way, I had an interesting observation. Frankly, given the fact that he's in the chat room, I'm surprised he's not in the Skype chat, but a note coming in from Tim in regard to the right-wing outrage about the indictment of the Baltimore Six. Tim said, right-wingers support cops? Really? It's race hatred and not justice that's fueling this stupidity? How do I know? Two words. Bundy standoff. Yeah, the right wing supports law enforcement unless they don't. That's about the size of it, isn't it?
Undoubtedly is. I mean, it just depends on who's getting indicted, you know? That's all they care about, you know? Just as long as their people don't get indicted, they're fine. You know? But otherwise, you know, people are making it a race issue if they're complaining that, you know, these cops aren't, you know, who are brutalizing the population aren't getting arrested.
Well, Rick, do you do any criminal work, or is it all strictly tax stuff?
White-collar criminal, tax defense, yeah. I do tax defense work, yeah.
And so certainly the presumption of innocence obtains there, at least nominally, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does nominally. As a practical matter, the kind of criminal cases I get involved in, they've already been investigated usually for 2 to 3 years by the federal government, and the IRS agents do the investigation generally, and they're the best investigators in the country as far as, you know, among law enforcement. So if they think there's, you know, if a case has been approved for prosecution, chances are your client is guilty. Or you're not going to have much of a chance of winning, let's just say. And so, I mean, 95% of the time in the federal system, the cases plead out.
But if you eyeball a cop, and that's probable cause to murder him.
Yeah, no, that's clearly not.
That's what I'm getting. The whole presumption of innocence has gone out the window, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, totally. It totally has. Totally has. I mean, you know, making eye contact with the cop reminds me of that old excuse cops would always make for pulling over a vehicle. Yeah, the driver cast a furtive glance at me. It's like, okay, what does that mean? That's not even...
Wait, I've never even heard of that. What?
Oh, haven't you? A furtive glance, yes, yes. Like they were acting suspicious because a cop was nearby.
I always read in the reports... the subject had the odor of the essence of alcohol on or about the subject of the person's body.
Oh, jeez. Well, that too, I imagine. But, yeah, in fact, I think...
And, I mean, that's everything from old Panther piss to Listerine to the diabetic guy swabbing his finger to test his blood sugar.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, our bodies can give off odors, like if we have diabetes or something, that, you know, that it smells like alcohol or it smells like, let's say, pear alcohol or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a very imprecise way of doing it. But with regard to this whole furtive glance thing, I think the Supreme Court may have even ruled that that's not, you know, I don't know if that's even reasonable suspicion. I know it's not probable cause, but... Yeah, I think there was a big Supreme Court case involving that in a seizure, a stop case, a search and seizure case.
Well, I find it a little Orwellian, all this talk about criminal justice reform.
Because, oh, yeah.
Well, and let's start with the idea that criminal justice is... an Orwellian term in the first place? I mean, what is a person, and I'm not being mean here, what does a person who goes and gets a degree in criminal justice actually learn?
I suppose how to railroad people, maybe.
Well, I mean, it's a I mean, for instance, there's a lot of police running around with master's degrees because there are institutions out there that specialize in granting master's degrees in criminal justice to police officers who are taking it one or two or three classes at a time.
Right.
Probation officers have degrees in criminal justice.
Well, I mean, I think it, you know, I think that discipline, Bob, is actually a legitimate one. I mean, it, to the extent that you're going to a, you know, an accredited school, and they're actually teaching you about, let's say, constitutional law and criminal practice and procedure and, you know, rehabilitation theories and philosophies and things like that. You know, the idea, you know, why we have punishment. I mean, if you get into, like, the philosophy of law and what have you, I mean, then I think, you know, that kind of a degree might actually help a cop, you know, become a better cop or become a better administrator of cops if they're, like, a supervisor.
Right. So it's actually more of a degree in policing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I think it probably is. Or, you know, a lot of probation officers, as you mentioned, have that, you know. And if you want to get really specialized, you can even, I suppose, take courses like in the, you know, federal sentencing guidelines, like probation officers could, so they can figure out how to calculate, you know, the various offense levels and enhancements and departures and you name it, you know.
Yeah. And as previously noted, the federal sentencing guidelines are a Byzantine nightmare of how to screw the convicted.
Yeah,
because
they are.
Because somewhere along the way, we came up with the notion that lifetime appointed judges somehow lack the judgment to be able to apply a criminal penalty statute to the given situation.
Right. Right. You know, the whole idea behind the sentencing guidelines was to reduce sentencing disparities and to have consistency in sentencing, I guess the so-called fairness in sentencing, if you want to call it that, you know, where, you know, 3 years is really going to be 3 years less, of course, your 15% credit for good time served.
And but consistency in sentencing, isn't that, Rick, isn't that kind of oxymoronic within a mercy and justice universe?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it really
every person who commits a given crime has not committed it the same way with the same degree of malicious intent. You know, there's a big difference. I mean, that's why we've got, say, involuntary manslaughter versus second degree versus first degree murder.
Right. Right, which is why the officers today were charged with murder too. I guess malignant heart murder or whatever it is. I forget. I don't know if it's malignant heart or what they called it, but something like that, depraved indifference, something like that. But yeah, I mean the idea behind having a judge do the sentencing instead of a jury is supposedly this, you know, this Solonic kind of figure, you know, can properly balance the scales of justice and mercy and reach the correct sentence for the particular individual, not have a bunch of cookie cutter sentences. And so from about, I'd say from about the Reagan era, around maybe 84 until, I want to say 2005, the sentencing guidelines were mandatory, federal sentencing guidelines. So the only way a judge could avoid sentencing somebody, let's say, for, you know, let's say they have a rock of crack cocaine, they had a mandatory minimum of, what, 5 years or whatever, maybe 10 years. So the only way they could, mandatory minimums, the judges still have no discretion, even under the new sentencing regime.
Right,
But, you know, so for about 20 or 30 years, the, you know, the guidelines were mandatory, and the only way you could depart is if somebody could show, like, some extraordinary circumstance. For example, you know, if they're incarcerated, I got, like, a family of five, and I've, you know, got a wife to support, and, you know, she's paralyzed, and I've got a kid with autism, another one with Downs, and, you know, if I can't work and make a living, this whole family is going to go to pot. I mean, that's an example of a mitigating circumstance that could be used in the old regime to result in a lowered sentence. But at least now, since 2005, Supreme Court has determined that the guidelines are just advisory, which means that they kind of set a baseline for the sentencing. And I'd say probably about, you know, in my district, in the Central District of California, about maybe 50%, 60% of the judges usually go with the guideline sentence, and I'd say probably 30% go below it, and maybe 10% sometimes upwardly depart.
Yeah, just because, I don't know, bad day, or they smell a fishy deal between the prosecution and the defense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I've had judges tell me, hey, what's the deal here? It looks like the government has given up a lot, you know. This is when I was a prosecutor. What's going on here? Why didn't you hit them with all this other tax loss that you could have hit them with? You know, why just for, you know, for these 2 years or whatever it is, you know, or for these returns, you know?
Why the stream littering charge when you had them dead to rights on burglary?
There you go. Oh, gosh.
Well, let's check in with some other folks. By the way, for anybody wanting to participate by phone, the Gizmo line is open, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And you're welcome to jump in on that if you wish, and you can't participate via Skype. So it's out there for you. Good evening, Richard.
Hey, good evening, Bob. Greetings from the minor tributary of the Appalachians, known as the Washington Mountains, which are more like hills.
Yeah, we throw that mountain word around pretty loosely, don't we?
Yes, absolutely. I want to wish you and Agnes a happy double 11s. That's fantastic. As you made it to 22 years. My brother just celebrated his 40th wedding anniversary recently. Made me feel real old.
I can't even contemplate 40.
Well, is that because you're going to live to another 18 years, or?
No, it's just I feel like I'm tempting fate by looking out that far.
You have a good point there, Bob. I'm a member of. I find the discussion fascinating about what you did before you started the roundtable and then talking to Rick about sentencing guidelines and prosecution of cases such as what happened in Baltimore with the Baltimore Six. I'm a member of AA. I've been in recovery for 36 years. And it tends to be, as you know, a fairly conservative organization. But I got into a discussion with five of my friends in the rooms there, and all six felt the cops needed to be indicted. And this was before half of them had heard the news, which I had heard earlier in the day, that these cops were actually going to be charged. And I'm such a pessimist. I don't really think anything much is going to come out of it. And God help the city of Baltimore if it doesn't, because if there's not a successful prosecution, if they're found guilty, I mean all of them, I think the streets are going to be on fire. Not only in Baltimore, but throughout the country, like I remember back in 67 with the Watts, Newark, Plainfield, Detroit riots that I remember very well as I was a young teenager back then. And I was in the battle zone myself. And I think we have the potential of having that happen again this summer if there isn't at least one prosecution in this case that leads to a conviction.
Well, that's where my knowledge. Yeah, I have no knowledge of Maryland law, and I kind of wish Harry was listening this evening because, and he probably isn't since I announced last night that I wouldn't be on the air. I don't know what the. I mean, there are some states where you can simply be charged with a crime via the filing of an information instead of being presented to a grand jury for indictment. You can be charged by information in West Virginia, but only if you consent to such filing. That usually means there's been some sort of a plea deal. It kind of works the same way in the federal system. But there are some states where the state's attorney can just file an information and boom, you know, you're on the way to trial. I don't know if Maryland's like that. But if it's not, then simply saying we're charging them is no solution at all. It merely says the process is going to be started. It doesn't even say that a grand jury, you know, like the one that turned Darren Wilson loose in Missouri, it only says that they might hear the case. I mean, let's say you're standing trying to jimmy somebody's doorknob at 2 o'clock in the morning and a police officer comes by, well, that never happens because it never happens, but the police officer can arrest you right there smack dab in the middle of the commission of what is an obvious felony, to wit, nighttime burglary. Well, you'll be charged and admitted to bond, you know, charged, arraigned, admitted to bond, but you'll still have to wait for the grand jury to hear the case. And the grand jury might find out in the interim, well, that was actually the homeowner. In which case, the grand jury says no true bill and sends the prosecutor on his way. There is no guarantee coming out of this. Yet this was, despite all the right-wing Sturm und Drang, this was nothing more than an attempt to get people out of the streets, to go back and you know, go about your business, citizens. Return to your homes. So that some degree of quiet can prevail over the polity there. But until a grand jury returns a true bill or some sort of an indictment or information is filed, this ain't nothing.
I agree, Bob.
This is broken window dressing.
My only concern is that if it goes that route, where it does go to a grand jury and there's a dismissal, a total dismissal of any charges against any of these police officers, the street's going to run red with blood this summer in Baltimore.
This
reminds me so much of 67 that it's unbelievable.
Well, as a guy who doesn't pray, I'll say I pray it doesn't happen that way. Because it'll work in both directions. It will mean a license has been given to the armed to the teeth police to kill at will, and it will mean that there will be nothing, God knows, no mercy, and nothing even approaching whatever ephemeral justice can be afforded to somebody who's already been slaughtered.
Well, I'm absolutely right. There is no justice for the deceased victim in this case, like you said when you started the program. But I'm not concerned with justice now. I'm concerned with justice, but righteousness here. And I don't use that term loosely.
No, and I think that is Richard, that is a far better word. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're right. I mean, I'm glad you understand my meaning here because, you know, I mean, this has got to end. Look, I can really, you know, in my younger days, I have been what would be considered a thug, a white thug, because I was out there in the streets, like I said, in Plainfield and Newark in 67. I have worked on crews with migrant workers in Oregon picking string beans. I've been involved in, was actively involved in the 60s and 70s in the anti-war movement. I was called a communist more times than I can remember. So I know what it's like to be in the shoes of these people in Baltimore that are being vilified en masse merely because they don't fit the established order of things. They want justice and righteousness. And that's all I've ever wanted in my life. And I paid a dear price for it over the years. I was on Nixon's enemy list in the 70s for calling him a fascist on my school newspaper in college. I found out later from the local police that I was under constant surveillance. So as far as I'm concerned, like you say, the greatest country in the world, I've never seen it as the greatest country in the world. Until we have justice and righteousness, there will be no great nation in this United States of America.
Yeah, very, very well said, Richard. I listened to the state's attorney general announce the charges, and I really don't think this is just a stunt to get the people out of the streets. It sounds like, I don't think she would have announced these charges unless she really has some confidence they're going to be able to stick.
And now they want to recuse her. They want to recuse her because, in their mind, she's unfairly against the police. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, but
she's too effective. I mean, that if people start to criticize her, you're making an impact.
Well, and the other part of that is that the police union is doing what the police union does. They're just out there protecting these six cop rioters, regardless of their guilt or innocence, because they just happen to be members of the police union. They certainly don't feel that way about the people that are abused by the police, and so they're gonna do what they're doing union business. And I don't mean to sound anti-labor or anti-union, but I don't know. The union.
Well, I've never thought, Bob, I've never thought that police unions ever were truly unions. By the way, I'm suggesting there's a bumper later on if you're going to have the time or the inclination to play it. At least a snippet of the International, since this is International Workers' Day.
Well said. Good idea.
Yeah. And also, Bob, how about playing Curtis Mayfield's Freddy's Dead?
That's a little hard.
Yeah, that's what Norman said as well today.
It's
a good song.
It works.
Yeah.
You guys are thinking in terms of bumpers. That works.
It's edgy, clearly.
Well, I mean, this day in history. Without this day in history, most people that I know that have secure corporate jobs don't even realize that all the benefits that accrued onto them in their employment were granted on the backs of the blood, sweat, and tears of union laborers in the 30s and 40s. They have no conception of the history of the union movement in this country at all, nor do they care, because they, like you like to say, they got theirs.
Yeah, Igumfu, I got mine, F.U.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right there, Richard. I mean, and to go back even further, I'm trying to think when the Haymarket riots occurred in Chicago. Was that on May Day as well? In the 1880s or thereabouts?
Let me check.
Yeah. I think it occurred on May Day. Because it was, labor-related, I know. Or maybe it was during a strike. I'm not really sure. But I guess to go back just a bit to that whole thing in Maryland, the charges, I don't know how their system is in Maryland as far as, if you have to indict by grand jury or if you can file an information. There are some states, like in California here, you can file an information against someone. This is at the state level, not federal. You can file an information against someone, and then you have a preliminary hearing at which time the judge will determine whether there's probable cause sufficient to bind the defendant over for trial or not.
Does that happen in a circuit court or with some sort of lower magistrate level type?
That would be, I think, like a regular judge would handle that, but usually they have judges who just handle preliminary hearings. For example, in California they do that. you know, they're regular Superior Court judges, but they're not, you know, they're not like inferior judges or anything like that, but they may, perhaps all they handle is, you know, preliminary hearings. Like that happened in the O.J. Simpson case, if you remember.
Right.
And I think even in the federal system, I think there is a proceeding to, I think there's a procedure whereby, you know, an information can, you're right, usually federal defendants are indicted if they don't have a plea agreement worked out, you know. But in some cases, I think you can file an what you do is you file a complaint, not an information.
Yeah.
A criminal complaint is filed, and then that's followed up with a preliminary hearing. And I know that they don't like to do cases like that in L.A., you know, like that very often, because it gives the defense basically a free shot at all the evidence you have, or a free shot at a lot of evidence you have to support the prosecution. But I know they do it that way, I think, almost exclusively in the Boston District Court, for example. So it kind of varies according to the districts.
Yeah, well, and varies, and then, you know, state to state.
Right.
I'm thinking, I may have it wrong, but I'm thinking in Pennsylvania, a prosecutor can just charge you via information and away you go.
But I think there has to be a filter, though, to determine whether there's probable cause for you to be bound over for trial. And, you know, in some cases, that filter is the grand jury. In other cases, it's an actual judge.
Well, that's the whole concept of probable cause can be a very subjective determination. You know, a judge could easily say, or the grand jury could easily say, in spite of all evidence to the contrary, that they don't have probable cause and dismiss a case. I find that as being a very low bar for criminal prosecution. The idea of probable cause without evidence being meticulously and objectively researched and gone over. So many times probable cause will be dismissed on the say-so of a prosecutor or a judge, because they don't believe it's probable cause.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It kind of lies in the eye of the beholder to some extent. You're correct about that, Richard. But, I mean, I think, you know, the way a good prosecutor looks at a case is, you know, they have to be confident that chances are more likely than not that they're going to be able to get a conviction in a case before they even bring a charge. At least that's the standard for, you know, that my old office at the U.S. Attorney used to follow.
So that means by its very nature, it's going to be heavily politicized in many cases, which I believe is going to happen, unfortunately, here in Baltimore. All right, that it's going to be politicized to the point where they're going to try to pretend they'll go through a charade of justice, and then they'll say, well, we don't have probable cause and dismiss.
And see, this is the essential problem. If one takes as read the charge and the indictment, and you can get it all the way to the trial phase, and there's and Rick, you can speak to this. There's plenty of opportunities for the case to go bye-bye long before a jury gets it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You could have a prosecutorial misconduct and failing to turn over evidence to the defense, any number of things, yeah.
Or just a straight-up motion to dismiss because it doesn't meet the elements.
Right.
All of that. But then, so the part of the reason, and some of this is just from reading the news, remember, you had six cops. All of those cops were bound by contractual obligations to answer questions when questions were put to them. Five of the cops sat down and followed their contractual obligations and gave statements. The sixth cop lawyered up and dummied up, which, even though he's violating the terms and conditions of his contract, is his right within the meaning of the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution. So all six get charged, but only one gets charged with second-degree murder. That's the wheel man. That's
right.
The guy driving the van. Now, what you're, tell me if I'm wrong, because I'm just speculating here. What you're hoping for as a prosecutor, Rick, is that one of those five, or two of those five, or three, or four, or five of those five will roll on the wheel man.
Precisely.
Because the rest of them are only charged with assault or involuntary manslaughter. So if you can get a plea out of one, two, three, four, or five of them and have them roll on the wheel man, you got a better chance at a conviction.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. As I recall, I think he's looking at us up to 30 years of jail, whereas the others are only looking at up to maybe 10 years. And so, yeah, that's the idea, is to put pressure on the wheel man. Now, I don't know, is he the one who lawyered up, the wheel guy, the wheel man?
We don't know. I'm presuming that he is.
Yeah.
Because it seems like that would be the pattern if you're, just from the way it shook out.
Right.
Now.
But Bob, isn't it entirely plausible that the union is just going to tell them all to hang together? Rather than hang separately.
Plausible. It is a 100% certain lead pipe cinch guarantee. The blue wall of silence. You know, when the mob does it, we call it omerta.
Omerta. I know that well.
When law enforcement does it, we call it brotherhood.
Yes.
Or we could call it blue merta.
Oh, nicely done.
Do I get a cowbell?
Yeah, you absolutely get a cowbell.
All right.
That's toaster. Right. That's toaster worthy. That needs to be a that needs to be some sort of a hashtag, Blue Merta. Because see, at the end of the day, let's consider this. If the police union doesn't police its membership, well, how are they anything but an organized crime operation?
They aren't. You're exactly right what you said before. They feel their only responsibility is to protect their membership. They don't care about justice. They want to protect their membership.
And you know what? I want that to be the case with people who are out there because see, we've so fetishized police and that's notorious in fascistic and fascist countries. We've so fetishized our police that we act like nobody else ever risks their lives. The guy who is moderating and has moderated this Skype group for years on end risked his life every damn day he went to work, fooling around with high voltage. Now, fortunately, he was trained, Sparky,
yes.
and had constant training. And you had a union that was looking out for your well-being. I want that union to be absolutely concerned with nothing more, first and foremost, with the well-being of the people out there doing electrician work. It is not the same thing when you're talking about police.
Right. I mean, I'm thinking
because
of that
because
guy
Sparky who's... wasn't going to work every day with a gun on his hip, with the power to extrajudicially execute people.
No, you had to watch out for yourself.
That's what
we call our little meters and stuff. We carry our life insurance.
But you carried an arc welder around with you just in case, right?
No. I have this little device that fits in my pocket. And it lights up when you to test if there's any voltage. We call them sniffers.
Yeah.
And it'll light up if there's voltage there, and then so you know not to touch it or anything until you kill it or find the source and turn it off.
Yeah. That's a great point, though, Bob, as far as how we just place these officers on a pedestal and, you know, like they can do no wrong. And then even when they do wrong, they still can't do wrong because, you know, they're police, damn it. You know, they're helping America.
Right, because Merca.
Helping protect us, the greatest nation in the world on earth.
Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, ever.
But as far as the cops getting continual training, who's responsible for that? The union of the city, the employer.
That would be the city, Sparky. I mean, the actual police department would be responsible for.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, whatever the jurisdictional body is.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's a union.
Yeah.
International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers.
Right, because if you were counting on the contractors to train electricians, you'd have a class with them going, "Hey, lick your finger and grab that."
Yeah. No, it's a joint thing, but I mean the contractors have a say in the training. But it's all up. I mean, because they for every hour you work, you contribute a quarter or something like that, or 50 cents gets put in the training fund.
Yeah, I get the sense that the main function of the police unions is not really to necessarily, you know, they don't really exist for safety reasons for the officers so much as to help with their benefits and lobby to keep them out of trouble and, you know, have a list of attorneys on speed dial in case there's officer misconduct to, you know, give them a referral for, you know, for an attorney if they need one. I really don't know that the police unions do a whole lot in the way of police training as such. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we've got an officer listening or some law enforcement person listening. I don't know.
I think they're more concerned with defending bad behavior than making sure there's proper training.
Right, because see, that's the thing. These officers are, most of them, I would assume, protected by civil service in the first place. Are they not?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so that affords a little bit of job protection, but as much or more than anything else, it seems like they're there for purposes of enforcing the blue wall of silence, blue merita.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I mean, you just have to look at how the New York police union reacted after Bill de Blasio had the nerve to say that he told his son to watch out for cops and, you know, how they, like, you know, wanted him to resign and, you know, Pat Lynch, the head of the police union up there, was, you know, making a big stink about it and, you know, all because, you know, de Blasio had to have the talk with his son because he's, you know, half black.
And
go
consider
a lot further back.
Well, and consider this, okay? If you're a union member in most circumstances, you're a union member. You know, you're rank and file. You might be a journeyman, master craftsman, whatever, but you're part of the rank and file. Well, where does it cut off in a police situation? Okay, you're a beat cop. You're sitting in the cruiser, whatever. You're a member of the police union. What happens when you make sergeant? What happens when you make lieutenant? At what point in time? Because, you know, we had, back during the bad old days of the Bush administration, there was a nasty-ass NLRB case that came down that said that management was whoever corporate said was management. And so all of a sudden, if you work in, and it was a nurse's case, I think it was the Kentucky Nurses Association, wasn't it? Because the issue had to do with the hospital management said that anybody who gave orders to anybody else was suddenly management and not entitled to union protection. And this was back when Elaine Chao, the wife of chinless Mitch McConnell, was running the Labor Department, and she said, "Damn straight!" So all of a sudden, if an LPN tells a CNA to go empty a bedpan, that LPN can't have union protection. Now, does that apply to the police? I mean, if you're a lieutenant, are you out of the union? If you're a captain, are you out of the union? Do you get out of the union if you become a desk sergeant? Or so I don't know.
I don't think so, Bob. I don't see that would apply. I think you'd be a member of the union, no matter how high you rose up the ranks.
Because I'm sure the union collectively bargains for the membership.
Tim from L.A. tells me it's from captain on up. I'm assuming it, okay. So what does that mean, Tim? I'm going to ask for a little clarification there. Oh, by the way, I just saw that Ron jumped into the conversation. Good evening, Ron.
Good evening, Bob.
I thought you were working.
I just finished. I heard the dear reverend calling my name. I hit a logical stopping point, so I downed tools.
Blessed be his holy name. Thanks be unto the 19th century Baptist movement that gave us the Reverend Elijah Craig.
Absolutely.
And to a certain extent, the Reverend Evan Williams, although I think his doctrine is a little more shaky than Reverend Craig's is.
Occasionally, you hit the point where just show me some gospel, I'll be happy.
Well, you know what? I've been in that dogmatic wilderness, so I understand completely. Update coming from Tim in L.A. He says, from captain on up to chief are management in the LAPD, and they have their own union. What? Because, see, I gauged this against my own experience. I remember what my father said. He looked at me, and he said, if you ever work in an industrial situation and they offer you and they offer to let you be a foreman, tell them to go to hell. He said, the worst thing I ever done was join management. Because the minute he became a furnace foreman, he lost all of his union protection. But apparently you can be a cop and management and you still get a union? That's a nice racket. Emphasis on the word racket.
Tell me, Bob.
What, Richard?
I think you need to add an ing at the end of that, Bob.
You mean
racketeering?
Racketeering.
Yeah, you need an eering.
There you go.
I don't want to prejudge the case, but the problem is what's going to happen with the trial of the Baltimore Six is that nobody knows what happened in that van. But here, Rick, let me put another question to you. This is turning into the Ask Lawyer Rick program. If you can establish that there is a pattern and practice of enforcing extrajudicial punishment via something called rough rides,
mm-hmm.
and if in fact it is demonstrated that Caesar Goodwin gave Freddie Gray one of those rough rides, how in the hell is that heat of passion murder instead of murder in the first degree? Can you suss that, Rick?
Well, I think I don't think it's heat of passion so much as it's a malignant heart. Like they basically, it's like shooting into a crowded movie theater. You're not like James Holmes or Holmes.
Depraved heart.
Depraved heart is the expression. Yes, depraved heart.
So would that be first degree murder then, Rick?
No, it's not. It's basically when you engage in conduct that is so likely to cause a human serious bodily injury or death of someone else, but you do it anyway. You basically act with.
It's like one step above gross negligence.
Right. Right. Like the gangbangers who do drive-by shootings would get murder too. Okay, if they're just generally shooting and it's so likely to create, to cause serious bodily injury or death that you have the requisite intent to be guilty of murder too.
Okay, but so here's another wrinkle. There are cases out there, because I remember reading them in school, where they, for first-degree murder, you've got to have malice aforethought. You've got to have premeditation.
Right.
And there are cases out there that say that premeditation can be formed in the sin. And, man, this is one of those troubling terms. Anti-democratic, non-mathematical, illogical. But that premeditation can be formed in the scintilla uris before the trigger is pulled.
So does that mean a split second before?
It's not even a split second. It's like an it's like a micron of a second. That's all it takes to form premeditation. So I mean, maybe it's just a flavor of prosecution, but honey, I mean, I understand the depraved heart charge, but by the same token, when if the thing ever goes to the jury, isn't the jury going to get? For instance, if you're charged with second degree, the jury will get instructed on second degree, voluntary manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, not guilty. Right?
Right. The lesser included offenses they'll be instructed on, yes. Generally, sometimes the defense will resist that and roll the dice and say, no, we're not going to allow any, you know, we're not going to allow instructions on lesser included charges.
Right. I mean, it's a process. But doesn't that mean that if you charge first, that then you get to include first, second, third, et cetera?
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much.
And here's a second question. If you ever decide to go and have a cup of coffee in law school, you're going to spend 3 years awash, and you can gainsay me if I'm wrong, Rick. You're going to spend 3 years awash in hypotheticals, and you're going to find yourself living in strange little places that are known as Black Acre and Brown Acre and Green Acre and Red Acre and White Acre.
Right, or in Antonin Scalia's world, you're gonna live in a place where
two men
and two women want to get married and so forth each other, and then they move to a state that doesn't allow it.
Right, or you're just gonna if you're Slappy Thomas or Fat Tony Scalia or Sammy Bad Breath Alito or John Roberts, all just live at White Acre, okay?
Right, exactly.
But anyway, so one of those hypotheticals, and it's one of the ones that. It was my experience. A lot of people had a hard time getting their heads around was the concept of felony murder.
Oh yeah.
So you're over at your buddy's house, and y'all's drinking a bit, and you got to go on a BWERRUN beer run, and you as the guy with the car who, and let's hypothetically posit that you're the soberest one in the group. You're the wheel man. You're driving. Well, little do you know that you're going to pull up to the Rippy Mart, and your buddy on the way out is going to pull a stocking cap out over his head, go in, blow the brains out of the clerk, and steal everything in the cash register. And then you don't even know this has happened. You never see the stocking cap go on. You never see the stocking cap come off. You never see the pistol. And he just gets in the car with the 18-pack of Milwaukee's Beast, and away you go. Well, next day they come and they arrest your buddy, and then they arrest you. And they charge you with first-degree murder, too, because it's felony murder. It is a murder that you are alleged to have participated in, which was, you know, it's a felony, and so it's transferable regardless of intent or knowledge. So... why was felony murder? And of course, it's that concept throughout especially the Confederacy has been unevenly and unequally and brutally applied to the community of color. Assuming that Maryland still has that rule, and most jurisdictions do, Rick, why is it not felony murder?
Well, I guess the felony would have been the wrongful imprisonment, the wrongful arrest of Freddie, basically. Because walking away from the office, running away from an officer after making eye contact is not, you know, that doesn't give you any basis to detain somebody or arrest them. So once they brought him into that van, I guess that would be, clearly that's a felony of false imprisonment at that point in time, or maybe even earlier, maybe when they had him on the ground before they put him in the van. Why didn't they charge it? Probably because the defendants are cops, Bob. I don't know.
Jesus, see, that's the answer I want. Rick, I wanted an answer that was academic and legalistic, and I wanted anything except because some people are white and some people aren't.
Yeah, I mean,
Or in this case, because some people are blue and some people are brown.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it seems like the prosecutors never have a problem overcharging a private citizen, but when it comes to a cop, God forbid you should charge him with, you know, first-degree murder or whatever, you know?
Hey, Bob, there's another possibility as well.
Okay, Rob.
And that is that at some point between now and the time they decide to actually go to trial, there will be a major effort made to turn at least one or two of those six.
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the previous conversation. Ultimately, since you've got one person charged with second-degree murder and everybody else charged with manslaughter, you're obviously going to try to get them to roll. You're going to try to break through that blue wall of silence, that blue merita.
Okay.
Yeah, speaking of the folks who could roll, though, I mean, it sounds like the driver's got the most exposure, and then the guy who's got the next most exposure is the one who loaded him into the van, or two or three officers it took to load him into the van and then get him seated, and then not to you know, seatbelt them, okay, just leave him loose to roll around in the, you know, in the back of the van. So I would think that the two officers who may have been a little further removed, those are the ones who might have seen that they, you know, that they put this guy in the van without properly securing him and what have you, and maybe they're the ones who are going to roll.
But Rick, didn't the other five that were charged, other than the wheelman, didn't they all get all the same identical charges?
But very nearly.
Yeah, you know, and for some reason I thought I heard that there were murder two charges against two or three officers. Maybe I didn't hear the press conference right. I don't know.
I'm looking at the Reuters report now. It says Baltimore's chief prosecutor charged one police officer with murder, five others with lesser crimes.
Well, Reuters is a reliable source, so there you go. I defer to them, not my memory.
What about the other, quote, thug, unquote, who was in the back of the van? Was he seat-belted?
I don't know. You know, it's interesting how just like yesterday we were hearing like allegations that that he had said that Freddie had been trying to intentionally injure himself. But the weird thing about that story, which made it unbelievable in my mind, was that, you know, he could not actually see, you know, because there was a barrier there, not just a physical barrier, but also a visual barrier. So all he could hear was occasional like thumping against the wall, which could have just been from Freddie getting thrown around having a rough ride. But, you know, in looking at the tape of Freddie's, you know, being loaded into the van and so forth, they lifted him up off of the ground or whatever, and, you know, I'd like to know what happened.
Well,
that's where it began.
And understand, these charges only came out after the medical examiner had delivered his findings to the prosecutor's office.
Right.
If you watch that video, it looks to a layman's eye like he's already pretty profoundly injured by the time they're stuffing him in the van.
Wasn't he already crying out for medical help?
Oh, he was screaming when they were stuffing him.
Yeah, you can see the expression on his face. I mean, I haven't heard any audio. They have audio of that as well or not, Bob? I imagine they do.
Yeah, huh? You can hear him screaming. I mean,
Yeah, I mean, I saw a grimace expression on his face, so clearly he was in pain, you know.
and see, even that business with the sliming that went out yesterday, that the apparently ethics-free Washington Post ran with, the guy that they depended on for that has said, the police department are trying to hang me out to dry, because it came from a guy who was in a, I guess they're like individual little holding tanks inside these paddy wagons.
Right.
And he didn't see Freddie Gray. He had no way to witness it. And yeah, there it is. Police are using me to cover their ass.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he was detained in the van at the same time.
You know,
were either the second guy or Freddie, is there any reportage and them having been charged with anything?
Well, the second guy, I understand, was arrested on a parole violation, I think, or a probation violation. So he may have tested dirty for drugs or whatever, or, you know, been somewhere.
Well, not Fred. He was just seized and thrown into the van. No charges at all were voiced or reported on by the police at all.
I don't think they ever charged him with anything because he didn't make it. He was unconscious by the time he got to the police station.
Well, my understanding was that the reason they threw him in the van was the first place because he was doing exactly the opposite of what they would have wanted him to do. He was trying to calm the crowd. So how could he in any way have been charged with anything?
Are you talking about...
No, we're back at the original crime, Richard.
Oh,
what
okay.
was the original crime?
The original crime was the murder of Freddie Gray. There was somebody...
Well, I'm talking about the reportage I read online was that he was seized out of the crowd while he was doing nothing more than trying to...
Well,
there was
no crowd. Freddie Gray, there was no crowd. He was just an individual black guy who violated the eyeball rule, and they went at, and then he turned to get away, and they came after him. There was no crowd.
Okay. Even more grievous then.
But there was something.
Pinned a charge of switchblade on him.
Well, that was an attempt to slime him. Oh, he had a switchblade. Well, I'm sorry, I didn't know that we extrajudicially executed people for switchblades in this country now.
Well, if you got a switchblade or a box of cigars, you're fair game, Bob. You know.
Unless it's your maid with the box of cigars, and it's not cigars but money.
Or
and
Oxy.
She's going out to bring the cigar bags full of the cigar box pack full of OxyContin for America's right. Truth Detector.
Oh, jeez. Looks like I got someone else in the room here.
And it turns out that, no, it was not a damn switchblade. It was a perfectly legal knife. Because, you know, sometimes you need a knife. And not because you're a thug. But because sharp things, the ability to even make sharp things, kind of go to the essence of what it is to be a human being. There's a recent paleoarchaeology report that's making a big to-do out there right now. We've just pushed back the age of humanity by another couple of million years because they found a site in Kenya where there are stone cores that were put aside by people who were making sharp things with rocks. I guess if we ever get time travel, the Baltimore police will go back there and kill them too.
Oh, man. Yeah, it was like maybe a 2-inch pocket knife or something like that. Sometimes you need to just have that to tear open some of the hard plastic stuff that you buy, you know, like a mouse or whatever, you know? Yeah.
You ever tried to open a goddamn DVD? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You need a hand grenade for that. No, that's one of those great classic the W.C. Fields scenes. He came after me with a knife this long. Actually, it was an assegai. Mr. Soussay, does anybody ever come after you with a small knife? Well, yes, but it was a razor. That's it.
That power plant job I was on,
yeah,
with Bechtel, they get for safety awards, they gave us all these knives with a little scabbard, folding knife, kind of, and then you unfold it, and it's got like a sawtooth edge on it, too, like a little Rambo knife.
Right.
And one of the guys cut himself within an hour after they gave him out with it.
And he brought like a...
Well, you know, I mean, it's not so much you. It's when you're in the moment, and so is Mumbledy Peg.
So much of a safety record there.
So, yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, our safety record went shit right quick then.
And whose fault was it? The damn company.
Bechtel.
They should have given you guys AK-47s, then it would have been safer.
Oh. The only time we had people with guns on the job sites when Gray Davis came to visit. And then they had the California Highway Patrol that does his like the Secret Service that accompanies the governor, and they had those guys up because he was going to give a speech, and they had those guys up on top of these towers where they make the steam for the electricity.
Oh, jeez. Well, as it turns out, all it took to get rid of Gray Davis was a bunch of phony trading by Enron.
Mm-hmm.
To hike up the power prices.
This was right during that time.
Yep, phony brownouts. You got it.
Here we were working on a power plant, and we had this power plant, a biopower plant right next door, and we got hit by a power outage on the job site. So they had to send everybody home.
Well, I guess my position in all of this is that, and it's cynical, I admit it's cynical, but I don't hold out a lot of faith for a conviction.
Neither do I, Bob.
Well, I actually do for the driver. You know why, Bob?
Why?
Because he's colored.
See, that was the next question. I saw the name, and I went, I bet that's the black guy.
Yes, I think so. I think so. He's going to be the fall guy, probably.
And so doesn't that make it perfect? You pin you pin the toughest charge on a person of color in regard to the murder of a person of color, and everybody else with lesser charges, not so much.
Well, it cancels it out, you know?
Right. That's algebra, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's legal algebra.
No, minus 0 is still 0.
Well, I guess negative plus 2 minus 2 is 0, you know?
No harm, no foul, and, Freddy's in the grave.
Freddy's dead, unfortunately. And his defense is going to be, I didn't cause his injuries. He was already paralyzed by the time they loaded him in my van.
And if you're defense counsel, isn't that going to be the first thing you argue? Is that the video obviously shows that the damage was done by the people who took him down? Those were bicycle cops.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
They're standing there in their little Swiss tourist short pants. And apparently, because when they're carrying him to the van, he can't move his feet, and he's screaming in agony.
Yeah. No, he can't. He's like a limp ragdoll from the waist down, I guess.
And from now till whenever the trial is convened, if a trial is convened, the Baltimore Police Union is going to do everything it can to absolutely toxify, pollute, and corrupt any potential jury pool.
No question about it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, they'll be having press conferences left and right, They'll probably have fundraisers, events to raise funds for the lawyer or for the lawyers for the defendants and,
Well, that's why I used to walk by courthouse buildings that have carved into the plinth or the Fresnel or the hospedique, whatever the term is, equal justice under law. And I just used to look at it and giggle.
Yeah, right. Well, they got a big one in front of the Supreme Court building.
Yeah. So, I used to walk by that all the time, and I'd just chuckle.
Yeah, like, you're kidding me, right? Well, I mean, I think they get, I think a fair number of Americans, a fair number of the proles are convinced that there is equal justice under the law. They're, that the system is not rigged, but it really is, unfortunately.
Well, you only think that until you get into it.
You get all the justice you can afford.
Yeah, right. The best justice money can buy. Yeah, you're either too big to fail or too rich to jail, I guess, is how it works, in this country.
I think so. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you? Welcome to the gang.
Yeah, I'm good.
Oh, no, don't use that word. No, this is not a gang.
I'm good. It's good to see that I missed 2 months and pretty much nothing's changed.
Where were you, Antarctica?
Crap every day, isn't it?
Where were you, Antarctica?
What's that?
I said, were you in Antarctica, or, you know, I mean...
No, I've just been working really hard, and my daughter's softball league, also with high school, is pretty much in the afternoons. So as soon as work's over with, I'm at her high school with her watching games or taking her to practice or whatever. So it's actually been kind of nice, I have to admit. Not watching the news for a while and not listening to this stuff has been a little bit of a breather. But, man, you know, you I turn on the other day and I find out I didn't even see anything about Baltimore until about a week ago. And, you know, it's just amazing. Nothing changes.
SSDD, no, as they say.
It's so depressing. You know, you almost want to just crawl in a hole somewhere and not watch because it's just all it does is piss you off, you know? And
well, and that's ultimately the $64 million question. What does it take to change it?
Yeah.
Because we've reached a point where all this incrementalism ain't doing any good. Because
in my sunny little California town of Roseville that, you know, is not in your south or anything else, my daughter's high school today was graffitied in the hallways with white power all over the place. So apparently it's hit suburban California, too.
Yeah, there's some ugly shit coming.
They got a lot of minorities there at the high school?
Oh, yeah. It's good. I mean, it's a hodgepodge. It's the true melting pot. That's why it's just, you know, and they sent out an email to everybody saying we won't tolerate it and everything else. But my daughter texted me when she got there. She goes, I can't believe it. The crap is hitting here, too. You know.
Yeah, because obviously you've raised her right.
Oh, yeah. She was not happy.
You know, I sometimes wish that we had the Chinese justice system for people like that who deface buildings and try to create unrest between the races. I mean, at least the Chinese, they give you the charges and they take you up behind the building and put a bullet in each of your heads.
Yeah, sometimes you wonder, you know.
Yeah.
And then they charge the family for the bullet.
There you go.
And then you got idiots like Ted Cruz making the bullshit comments he did the other day, saying that, you know, President Obama's inflaming everything. And it's just... I wonder what he's going to say now about, you know, the driver gets prosecuted. He'll say, oh, equal justice, you know.
Well, the guy is anything but, you know, inciting, you know, racial division. I mean, I think what's inciting racial division is all this, you know, this Obama paranoia that people have. It's because of the black guy in the White House, unfortunately.
Yeah, and of course, when the reporter, you know, asks him for specific, you know, examples of this, he has nothing. You know?
Oh, by the way, and this is off topic, but it kind of isn't. I saw an encouraging story earlier. Granted, it's not. It didn't say Bernie out fundraising Hillary. He'd have to have his own printing press to do that.
Yeah.
That would be science fiction.
But with Bernie Sanders' announcement that he's in the Democratic primary. He's actually out fundraising all the Republicans in the GOP clown car right now.
That's great. That's great.
You mean there is some sanity in the American people? When
no,
they actually
I think
look
I,
at that clown car.
I think Bernie's going to catch fire, or it's certainly looking that way now. Because I mean, there's other stories out there too. For instance, there was a comparison. Bernie has already, in not quite two full days of candidacy, answered more straightforward questions than Hillary Clinton. If you ask Bernie a question, he will answer it.
It's refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of the anti-politician. I mean, he's very down to earth. I mean, if people get to know him, if he can just somehow... You know, not call himself a democratic socialist. That's like calling yourself, you know, instead of filet mignon, calling yourself dog food. I mean, you know, yeah. That's what he needs a good brander. You know,
he needs good PR.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what makes it so refreshing and powerful in his convictions and his campaign, is that he doesn't care what the right wing thinks of him. He's very courageous like that.
Oh, no doubt.
Did anybody see John Stewart last night?
Was that where he deconstructed Judy Miller?
No. He was doing the campaign. That was the night before. But he had a thing about Hillary Clinton, and a reporter was asking her a question. He says, "Oh, I'm going to write down her answer." So he scribbles on a piece of paper, and then you hear Hillary just dance around the issue. And then he looks at the camera, and he goes, "What?" And he holds up a piece of paper and he says, "All she had to do was say no." But she does this big, long dance around the issue deal where she doesn't even answer the question, really. I forget what it was, but, I mean, it was funny when he held up the piece of paper and said no, in big letters, no on it.
My biggest laugh of the day was getting my weekly fix of Fox at 5, and they were working themselves into an absolute froth over the fact that one of the blonde bimbettes had appeared on one of the late-night comedy shows, and they were talking a little bit about Baltimore. And apparently, she made some very insightful comment that was edited to fit their storyline. And Fox was just in a state of major high dudgeon. And I'm sitting there, damn near pissed myself, just laughing at them. And they were just so exercised that I think it was NBC Late Night would dare to use editing to shape their message. So, okay. Some things make me laugh, don't make anybody else laugh.
No, that's good. I mean, I admire you to have the fortitude to watch Fox News. I mean, the only Fox News I listen to is what I hear on Bob's show and Right Wing Watch and whenever Molloy mentions something with Fox News, but I can't put myself through that.
Like I've told Bob and Carol, I only listen to it occasionally so that I can get some sense of the kind of crap that's going through my mother's brain the next time I talk to her.
Oh, so you can assure yourself she doesn't have Alzheimer's or something like that, or what?
Yeah. I got time to prepare my arguments.
There you go.
I'm waiting for the study that proves that Fox actually causes Alzheimer's disease.
Well, I made a promise to myself after my dad passed away that Fox News would never be on a TV in this house ever again.
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Well, guys, I got to point out, somebody needs to watch them just to keep balance for what the hell they're doing, because
that's why we got Media Matters and Crooks and Liars. And
yeah, but that's somebody else forming your opinion for you, Sparky.
Well, I used to walk in the room when my dad was watching Fox News, and all of a sudden I get this skin crawling, creepy crud, and I hear Billow the Clown say something or Hannity, and I couldn't control myself. I had to spout off, and I pissed him off, and I get, all right, go liar, and he just go.
I think
I'm worse than you. I would be throwing bricks through my televisions if Fox News stayed on them for very long. It's almost instantaneous fury when you're watching that channel.
You know, I suspect there's going to be a linkage established between watching Fox News and heart attacks at some point.
Hey,
or high blood pressure or something.
Just sort of doubling back to the Baltimore situation real quick. Here's an interesting factoid. Now, was it yesterday, the day before? No, it was yesterday. No, day before. We had the story about how there were in excess of 200 people rounded up by the Baltimore police, put into detention, kept in holding cells for in excess of 24, sometimes as much as 36 hours, no arraignment, no pretrial anything, no showers, and the Baltimore judicial system was absolutely rendered paralyzed.
Hmm.
Okay? Well, guess what? All the members of the Baltimore Six have already been charged, arraigned, and admitted to bond, even the one accused of depraved heart murder. By God, the judicial system can get unparalyzed real quick, can't it? I mean, that's almost a miraculous healing, isn't it?
All in America, Bob.
The greatest country in the world on earth right now, ever today.
What about,
amen.
What about the
amen.
200? They still in there sweating and stinking and living in shit?
I have not seen that. But you know what? Even if they're all out now, you've got a constitutional right to a rather rapid arraignment, I think, in this country still.
Well, in theory,
unless
you do. I mean, they, you know, those folks shouldn't be complaining. They should be lucky they didn't get sent down to Guantanamo, Bob. You know, what are they complaining for?
Or they're lucky they didn't get a rough ride.
There you go.
Well, the driver, he's a terrorist because he isn't white, so he may end up down there and, you know, get what's coming.
And Gitmo.
I'm sorry, but this just feels like the I don't know.
Well, it's two justice systems.
This feels like we've all paid our quarter and gone this way to the egress. Yeah, we're going to see that damn egress. We're going to see us some egress justice. Hey, why are we outside the circus all of a sudden and got to pay get back in? Some bitch.
Bob, do you go to see Stone Kettle Station by Jim Wright? Do you read his stuff?
I got issues with him.
Yeah, well, he did a good one here on Baltimore. You should read it.
Well, I'm just afraid if I read anything that he wrote, he'll threaten to sue me.
Yeah, don't. he threatened to sue Malloy.
Not on the air. Just check it out. He pisses me off, too, most times, but this one's pretty good.
Well, I just hope nobody writes and thanks him for the fact that you promoted his damn site. Because the next thing you know, he'll be threatening to sue me if I don't turn you over, Michael.
Oh, turn me over then.
I mean, good writer, good mind, enjoyable reads. Asshole.
Subtle.
Speaking of Malloy, I hear the chat room is sponsoring an hour this tonight.
Yeah, Greg told me that. Thank you very much.
It's going to be a support the horn.
Thank you very much to everybody there.
Nice.
Because, well, this was this evening was has kind of, well, granted, it wasn't on the schedule. It was impromptu. It was al fresco. It was, I don't know, were we al dente too? I'm not sure.
A little on the tough side, Bob.
I'm sorry, Richard?
It was a little on the tough side, not al dente.
Oh, well, okay. So, you know, nobody jumped in with our overnight and earlier today funders. So, we'll enter Monday somewhere around evenish. It would be nice if anybody wants to jump in and do a sort of ex post facto, propter hope, greater love hath no man, nearer my God to thee, have a show on me this evening. That would be wonderful. It would be truly, truly wonderful. But, you know, just saying. So, I didn't mean to kill the conversation.
I was going to say silence.
But thank you very kindly for the sponsorship in the chat room this evening. I'll be tuning in a few minutes.
Yeah, well, Greg is listening out there.
I just got a contact request from Greg on this Skype account. I didn't know we weren't friends yet on this account. Hi, Greg.
This being all the times you've been in late night with us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but everything goes through you on that. So.
But, Bob, I would like to pass on my thanks to the lovely and talented Agnes for, A, sharing you with us tonight, and, B, simply putting up with you.
Yeah, she's got like a 22-year version of the Medal for Extraordinary Patience with extra butternut clusters or something. 22, yeah, it ain't easy.
Yeah, if you ever get over your shyness, you're going to be a sight to behold.
don't go there, Ron. Don't go there. No, she just looked at me earlier today and said, "Why don't you go to work tonight?" So,
well, if you remember, Ferg did that too a while back.
Well, he did do that.
Yeah, on his birthday, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. And by the way, in response to an inquiry, the cabana boy already had the day off. So,
are you sure he didn't take your Gulfstream 5, Bob?
There's a big old echo in the hangar. But the damn Maybach's gone too.
Damn.
Now you know why they sent you to work.
See?
Conspiracy there.
And now we got chickens on the front porch. Wow.
Yeah, don't check it out now, Bob. Too late.
But yes, Ron. Thank you very kindly for your very nice words toward the lovely Agnes, for she is that indeed. And for anybody who would like to see, I posted earlier today a little essay on my Facebook page about that day 22 years ago. And there's a picture of Agnes before we went up on the hill and all the fun started. She is the lovely Agnes. And
do you have an outdoor wedding?
Oh yeah, I mean, come on, I'm me. It was the church was a mountain.
So did we. Go. We got married in my sister's house in Rough and Ready, and we had sheep baaing in the background.
Nice.
Any
that could
chickens?
Be a West Virginia wedding too, Dunk.
What was that?
Sorry. I said, you could have sheep at a West Virginia wedding, too.
They tend to run away. hollering, that's just bad.
Bad, yeah.
You mean they don't try to grab the garter? They probably try to eat it.
No, 22 years ago.
Anyway, the second picture you posted of Agnes, I just want to say, wowza. You look very happy with the beer.
Well, yeah, and see, this is kind of a special anniversary. This is the anniversary that has arrived when all of our children are 18 or over.
Ah, nice.
That'll be the same year for me, too. I'm coming up on 19, but still got 3 left with the kid in high school.
Yeah, game on. Agnes told me earlier this evening, game on.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate everybody. Sparky, thank you especially for jumping in and pulling together a Friday on the Front Porch group on such short notice. I want to thank everybody for jumping in and listening, given the short notice.
Bob, thank you so much. Before you go, I just want to thank you again for... And I hope you have a good near future, Frank Schaefer. That was a wonderful program.
Oh, people continue to absolutely rave about that conversation. And all I had to do was say hi and sit back, and he was magnificent.
I hope you have him again in not too distant future.
We will try. We will absolutely try. And thank you, Richard, for jumping into the conversation. You were a voice that was pleasant to hear from this evening. Thank you to everybody. Thank you for your acumen, Rick. We didn't hear from Carol this evening in Australia, but thank you for being there. Didn't hear from Larry either, but thank you for being there. Thank you for
jumping. Happy anniversary, Bob.
Thank you, Larry.
Yes, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, Magnus.
Thanks for sharing it with us there, Bob.
Oh, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Thank you, Ron, for jumping in after wandering out of the doctrinal desert. And, Michael, it's awfully good to see you again.
Good to hear you again.
Or, yeah, see, hear, yeah. Verbs, what are you going to do? So it's time to get out of here. I presume the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will be in full flower immediately after Malloy's program this evening.
Haven't missed eating Friday night in almost 7 years.
There we go. So if you've never participated, jump on in after Malloy's over. Thanks to all of you who keep all of this going. Thank you for your kind contributions, which are the only way we continue to exist. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHECT.org. And always, 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 yes, Gina, it's all for you. And instead, this evening, being May the 1st, we'll close with a little something from Pete Seeger. Okay.
The song has been translated, as I said, into now hundreds of languages. But I'll sing it in the original French because it really is better poetry than the average translation would give you to believe. Debout les temps de la terre, debout les forces de la fin, la raison tenant sans la terre, c'est l'éruption de la fin. Du passé fais un table rasa pour l'esclave. Debout, debout, le monde va changer de base. Nous ne sommes rien, soyons tout. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous et demain. L'international sera le genre humain. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous et demain. L'international sera le genre humain. Wake up, you prisoners of hunger. The world is changing at the base. We who have been nothing will be everything. Of the past we shall make a clean slate. Impossible. Said we need no supreme savior, no God, no Caesar, no tribune. Producers, let us save ourselves. Blow upon our own forge. Soufflons nous-mêmes notre forge. Beat on the iron while it's hot. Il n'est pas de souffle suprême, ni Dieu, ni César, ni tribun. Producteur, sauvons-nous nous-mêmes, décrétons le salut commun. Pour que le vol rende gorge, pour tirer l'esprit du cachot. Soufflons nous-mêmes notre forge, laissons le faire quand il est chaud. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous et demain. L'internationale sera le genre humain. C'est la lutte finale, groupons-nous et
bless you, Pete Seeger.
Sera le
Have a great weekend, everybody.